My name is Julie Thorsheim.
And I'm Howard Thorsheim.
And this is our last session in the series we've had on story sharing and empowerment. And our focus today is on when we leave Holden, what are we going back to? Just a bit of background about myself. I'm a wife. As some of you know, we celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary while we were here at Holden, and mother to four sons. And my vocation is social work. I work with adolescents in an inpatient mental health setting in Minneapolis.
I think I'll just stay seated.
Okay.
Because it's more comfortable for me. So I was just playing the saw and my legs are tired. My name is Howard Thorsheim, and I'm a licensed consulting psychologist in the state of Minnesota, working as a professor of psychology at St. Olaf College and also doing work with congregations in partnership with them in approaches to empower leadership and to empower persons interacting with one another. Empowerment is that those things which we are able to do with one another, which are gifts of God, to share the gifts from our earthen vessels, our life experiences with one another. So the research work that I've been doing has been focusing primarily on processes of empowerment and skills of empowerment, ways in which we can encourage one another in life. Just a bit of background about what we're doing today. But before I say something about that, I have to say that I have a feeling today that really ties in with something that Norma, you mentioned last night at the staff meeting, a sense of a kind of a grieving of leaving this place. That's a feeling that's kind of running through what I'm saying today. So I need to name that, because that's a feeling that I'm speaking through, feeling through.
I want to follow up on that and ask, are any of you staying here for another month or more? Who of you are leaving today? Okay. So we are not alone in that. And I know that Norma Jean and her family are leaving by the weekend, and that Howard and his wife will be here another couple weeks. And what about you? It's Alma, right?
Yes, I will be leaving until Tuesday, day after Labor Day.
Okay, but none of us plan on a long sojourn here. So, okay, that is helpful. Many of you have met each other. We will be doing a kind of story sharing process in the second half of our hour today. Right at this point, though, we'd like you to look around the room and kind of connect with somebody that you either haven't yet met or, you know, scarcely know and would like to get better acquainted with, and just exchange names and learn one thing about each other.
Whole summer has been a treasure in earthen vessels, and part of the treasure that we bring to our interaction with one another is our own life experience. Life is not always smooth. It has bumps, it has crevasses, it has rock slides, sometimes it has smooth places, but it's all part of life. And it's particularly important for us to share all of the aspects of our life with someone else so that we don't feel a sense of being alone, and that also the other can receive the permission to share something of their experience as a result of the gift that has been given with our own story. But where does this all come from? It's really important, I think, to point out that what we're talking about is based upon research which has been conducted with 10,000 members of congregations, funded by a grant from the Department of Health and Human Services that I was a co-project director of, along with a colleague, Dr. Bruce Roberts, at St. Olaf College. And in that work with congregations, we learned a number of things. One of the most stunning and profound things that we learned was the power of story. This week, the theme of story, it's been exciting to see and to learn from Norma Jean Strawman and Michael Arendt and all of the persons. Who are some of the other people have been thinking about story? It's been a really important theme, and it's been coming up its importance has been coming up in many, many sessions. I'm thankful for all of those who have been lifting up the power of story. Well, what did we find in this project? We found that the word story did not mean the three bears. It did not mean Little Red Riding Hood. But story meant life. That sharing of one's story is to share one's life. One's life experiences that one has had, perhaps is going through right at the present time, or perhaps anticipating that will be happening. That was one big word, the word story. Another word that came up was one that really found to be exciting in hearing. So the first word is story, and that felt marker doesn't write, so I'll
this
find
green
a green one that does. And the green one really links nicely into the next term, because that word is hope. The word hope came up a lot in connection with story. And it took quite a bit of listening to understand exactly some of the relationships between story and hope. The other day, Howard Olson, talking about the forest as a renewable resource. And that's a powerful concept, renewable resource. It reminds me also of the water rushing down the mountain out here that's providing the power for the lights and for the heat of Holden Village. It's renewable because the snows come again and they build up and the snow melts and we have more water. Someone said to us in our project, you know, hope is kind of a renewable human energy resource that is fed by an outside source, and that outside source is God, and it's renewed. And then we said, well, what do you mean that hope is a renewable energy resource that humans are able to draw upon? And they said, well, it's, you know, fossil fuels are resources, but once they're used up, they're not renewable. And hope, on the other hand, is that sense that something is happening, something is going on, a sense that God is alive and well, and sometimes troubling the water in our lives, and that something's happening, something's going on. I was thinking about what Paul says in Romans about who hopes for what he or she sees. That if we are certain about something, then it's not really in the sense of a hope. We asked a chief executive officer of a major computer firm about the word hope in a conversation we were having with him. And his response was kind of a sad one, because he said, in this business we don't hope, we do. And we said, what do you mean? And he said, well, hope is sort of limp-wristed, sort of passive, waiting for things to happen to you. And that's really different from the Christian view of hope, which is clear-eyed, proactive, forward-looking, as well as a realistic sharing of what's going on in one's life now. So hope and story, somehow, in a miraculous way, the sharing of one's story with another is involved in the renewal of that hope. And it's when two people come together and share something about their lives, what they're going back to, which is the focus for today's reflection, one person listens to the other. And then the roles change, and the other person speaks, and the person who was speaking listens. Without either person trying to fix the other, or provide answers for the other, or tell the other what they ought to do about their situation, simply the act of listening and receiving the gift from another's earthen vessel, another person's life, and sharing of one's own gift, the reciprocal sharing of something that's going on in one's life, about what one is going back to, what one is thinking about, is healing. We don't really understand from the psychological perspective all that's going on there, because I don't think all the answers are in the psychological perspective of what's going on there. I think that's a gift. There's a gift. God is involved in our lives in ways that the ways of science are not designed to try to understand, and I don't think can understand. Well, what happens when people share stories with one another, share their life experience? We mentioned this in another session. There's an increase of trust. In being open and vulnerable in the sense of being authentic, vulnerable in the sense of sharing what one understand, what one is willing to share at a particular time. Trust doesn't immediately happen. We all know that from our own life experiences. When we meet someone, we don't all of a sudden say, here I am, all of me. I'm sure that you will take care of my confidence. But trust grows. But there is an initial leap of faith in the sense of trusting another in an initial interchange, which is a risk to take. But we want to make sure that people are also comfortable in sharing what they feel comfortable with sharing, and not feel in a session like today, where we're talking about what's going on in our lives or what we're going back to, that we necessarily have to tell everything about all the things that are going on in our lives or everything that we're thinking about, but whatever a person feels comfortable in sharing. So trust is a really important thing, both in the beginning of telling the story, because if we don't trust at all, we simply will shut it off and we won't say anything. We'll say, yep, nope, and that's about it. So there has to be some trust to share something about oneself with the other. The interesting thing is that trust then grows and continues to develop as that interchange continues, as one builds a friendship. And we know that with our close friends. Each of you bring to mind your closest intimate friend that you share things with. You see that trust has grown over a series of experiences. So there's a trust. There is some risk involved in living as a member of a Christian community. It means that one has the opportunity to be oneself. A lot of times in life, we receive messages that we shouldn't be ourselves, but we should be something else. We should either smell better, look better, dress better, do this or that, which is different from who we necessarily are. And sometimes we receive the message from others in many ways that we shouldn't really be open about our feelings, that we really shouldn't share what's going on in our lives because somehow that's inappropriate. Well, oftentimes it's the listener who is feeling uncomfortable with receiving the gift of story of someone else and thinks that he or she must have some kind of an answer. If somebody shares a story, one does not have to have an answer or a solution or analyze what the other person has said. To simply receive the other's story and to reflect back what you have heard in the story itself, not reflecting back some complex analysis of the story and what that all means, but simply what you heard that person say in receiving that gift. People who share life experiences with one another are healthier. Healthy in terms of psychological health, healthier in terms of physical health. So in terms of sharing of life story, there is also less likelihood of less chemical abuse on the part of people who share stories with one another. We've learned from our friends in Alcoholics Anonymous that we worked with in this research project, Al-Anon, Alateen, O-Readers Anonymous, and other groups, that, for example, in the 12-step program, it's very important to continue telling the story, to tell of one's experience, because it's part of the continuing staying healthy. Well, there are many benefits from sharing story, sharing life experience with another. And what happens is that both the person who shares the story benefits and also the person who receives the story, who hears it. Well, why is that? Well, when we share our own life experiences, parts of them, whatever we're comfortable sharing, it provides permission for the hearer to also reciprocate and share something back. It's an equal reciprocal exchange. It isn't that one person has shared and the other person says, oh, that's interesting, but I'm sure not going to tell you anything about what I'm going back to in my life. But I know what you're going back to, but I'm going to keep private what I'm going back to. Why is story sharing important? Well, there are so many boundaries that are drawn between ourselves and others in this life. In some of our Vesper services, we've talked about boundaries between people because of age, young, old boundaries. We've talked about boundaries that are drawn between races. We've talked about boundaries between people as a result of economic differences, boundaries because of just many, many different kinds of boundaries. Story and sharing of life experiences seems to be a bridge between people. as we share our life experiences with others. In closing, this little piece of what we're our reflection here reminds us of a story. I was mentioning this to Julie, and she thought this might would be a helpful thing to share. There was a group of about 30 second graders that were being shown some slides of images. It was an exercise in what do you see? And there were no answers given. It was not a slideshow where the second graders were told now what this is and what this is and what this is, which is an appropriate kind of a slideshow sometimes when you're showing for information. But this was images. So it was pictures of wildflowers and what do you see? And pictures of a forest and what do you see? And then there was a picture of the Earth, a famous picture that's been taken from the one of the Apollo flights, this beautiful, beautiful gem. It looks almost like an opal floating in a black velvet background, you know, with the red seashells and the clouds and everything. We said, well, what do you see? And I don't know what we were expecting to hear from this group. I mean, we didn't have anything in mind. And a little girl in the front row quietly said, we draw the lines. And I can remember saying, excuse me, what did you say? And she said, we draw the lines. And I still wasn't clicking with her, so I said, would you explain a little bit more about what you mean? And she said, look. And she could have said, look, you dummy, but she didn't say that. That was not she said, look.
She went over and got a globe?
Yeah, she said, look at this globe on the library shelf. And she went over to this globe that was sitting, you know, like every grade school has a globe. You know, it's one of the things that's in a room. And she said, you see all these dark lines between countries? Yes. And she said, look at the Earth the way it really is. I said, yes. And she said, there are no lines on the Earth. We draw the lines.
Wow.
We probably should have packed everything up then and said, thank you, Dad. Can't top that. But the wisdom of the fact that we draw the lines could be a note of despair, except for the fact that we also are the bridge builders. And it's story that helps to build the bridges between us, that connects us, so it's no longer a boundary.
Coming back then to the summer theme, embracing the contraries and treasure in earthen vessels, we were talking as we were preparing for this last session and simultaneously preparing to pack up our bags and go home, which many of you indicate is your situation today too, that Holden is really a contrary also. It's certainly special. It's certainly different than most of our daily lives, where the telephone is ringing and TV and radio on and lots of distractions. I guess I wanted to kind of hold up that contrary a little bit and ask each of you to reflect and then be willing to share with that neighbor you connected with a few minutes ago on what drew you to Holden. For some of you, you've come other times. For some of you, you've been here just a brief time, others longer. Each of us knew something about Holden, whether it's matched what we thought before we came this time or the first time. I heard somebody sharing yesterday that Holden wasn't what she expected. She'd been told she would have time for contemplation. I guess most of us haven't found just lots of solitude, although if we've carved out some time and taken some hikes or walks, I think it is possible to find that here, but certainly there's a lot of activity too. Something of what Holden has meant for us, continues to mean for us, I'm sure we want to take back home. I picked up a little book in the Holden library here, this marvelous library, called Adventures in Solitude by Lois Erickson. And what intrigued me about this is she's talking about ways we can find time in the midst of everyday activities to be alone with ourselves, get in touch. Sometimes it's while we're waiting in an airport, or she talks about the four-hour retreat, or making use of 10 minutes wherever we are, maybe in our own home, or ways in which we can shut out the world. I know for myself, some of the scenes I've experienced at Holden, some of the conversations I've had, I want to bring back with me, be able to close my eyes and imagine Buckskin and Copper Mountain and Martin Ridge and the burbling creeks and waterfalls. And I'm sure each of you has your own treasured pictures in your mind, too, of something of what you want to take back. So we would like to invite you into a two-part process here with the person you talked with a little bit before, to first share and listen on what it is that drew you to Holden. And each of you in this dyad share on that and listen. And then after you've shared and listened, then secondly, talk about what are you going back to and how will you bring back that something special that is Holden integrated into your typical day at home, into your life at home. We'll do the keeping track of time. We have time to have each person share for about 2.5 minutes and then flip so you listen if you've shared, and then we'll call time again for you to answer that second part. Many of you have been in these kind of processed groups recently, so we've already reviewed the active listening skills. We could maybe just say a word about that. The posture that you have can help show your interest, and eye contact is important. And showing that you're following by maybe paraphrasing something along the way that somebody is saying. And if you have questions, making them open questions, ones that can't be answered by yes or no. For about the last 10 or 12 minutes, the people gathered this morning have been in groups of two, sharing and listening on two questions. First, what drew you to Holden? And secondly, how do you hope to integrate your Holden experiences with what you are going back to? In the background, you can hear people continuing to share their stories one with the other, and we will be drawing them back together in the whole group shortly. We're going to now ask you to wrap up your story sharing, and we'll pull together as a group. Everybody have a chance to just about taper off with your story and to pull it together. It's really been fun to see how much genuine listening and sharing has been going on this time and other times too. It's real clear that you don't really want to stop. Does anybody care to make a remark about how this experience, you know, this listening and sharing, you know, how that ties in with your Holden experience? You may just feel like that was a piece of
time. I think one of the things that I learned was how easy it was to talk to people where you don't have that when you're back in the city again. You don't have that feeling that you could talk to anybody and have them be happy that you did talk to them. But here, people really welcomed you to talk. And you learn from them, too.
Thank you.
I found that to be very, very true.
I see some other nods around the room. I think we've all experienced that kind of receptivity and openness.
The friendliness.
And the friendliness.
Yes.
Well, that may be one of the contraries, or we may be able to look for that in surprising places back home also. Did anyone else want to remark about how it felt to do this sharing and listening? Yeah.
I went to Norma Jean's session the first day that I was here, and I've been sort of watching her from afar and have been very interested in having an opportunity to talk with her and to tell her I appreciated her first session, so this has been a treat.
So you, Chris, and Norma Jean got together. Good. Thanks for sharing that.
The power of story is sometimes thought to be the story itself, the content of the story, and that's really it. That really is important. It's also important to recognize how important the process of the telling is and the interchange, so that the story and the what exactly was said may even be forgotten. But the contact, the bond that was made, will be remembered. The psychologist Carl Rogers oftentimes speaks about after a meeting with a client that he doesn't really remember exactly what they said, but he remembers the feeling. And so it's the feelings that sometimes we remember, the sense of closeness, kind of thing that, Chris, you talked about, watching Norma from afar and the opportunity to share with her your appreciation for her and what she has been doing. And I think that's a really good example. When we listen at our edges of our own experience, where we're feeling sometimes, and this is another point, sometimes not sure about our lives or feeling stressed or anxious, Or in a region where we don't really know exactly what to do. For example, the first time on dish team here, I saw that great big, is it called a Hobart, that washing machine in there? And I was on dish team, and Linda Burgess was the team captain. And it was really helpful for me to say, I don't really know anything at all about this. You know, Linda, would you help me? Would you kind of walk with me on what to do? And she said, sure, when you work with chemicals, do you like to wear rubber gloves? And I said, yeah, I really do. And she said, well, there are some rubber gloves. And here are some pots and pans. And there were these enormous stacks of these pots and pans that had stuff cooked in. Some of you are relating to that. And there was this immense steel wool thing, which I'd never seen steel wool as big as this one. She said, you just take them down to the metal and then we wash them. Well, my edge, my not knowing what was going on, was her center. She knew this really well. And so oftentimes at the edge of our own experience, we really find ourselves closer to someone else's center of their experience. So they're real resources, and we are resources for them. We talked with one pastor, I remember, about his life and what he did, and we asked him the question, where do you find your support? What keeps you going? And he said, I bowl a lot. And he bowled alone. And the tragedy of that seemed to be really brought into bold relief by another pastor that we talked with. We said, where do you find your support? What keeps you going? And he said, well, when I came to this congregation, it was a rural congregation in southern Minnesota, he said, I was really feeling scared because he said, I'd always heard that it was really tough to be out in the rural communities. And he said, I didn't know what to do because I'd lived in the city all my life. So he said, for some reason, I was talking with somebody who'd been around here for a long time, a pastor who was retired. And I talked with this retired pastor and said, "What did you ever have a situation that you went into where you didn't know what you were going to, what to do?" And the pastor said, "Yeah, sure have." "Well, what did you do?" He said, "I tried to find some of the old timers in the congregation, and I asked them, would you be willing to share things that are helpful from your perspective on how to work with this congregation to get to know them? And would you be willing to get together with me once a month for breakfast? And where I can just be myself and say, I don't know what to do. Could you help me? Do you have some suggestions?" And so this group turned out to be a very interesting reciprocal support group, because both the pastor, in his vulnerability, provided permission for these veterans in the congregation to also share some of their pain. Pain about aging, pain about hips, pain about children who are off different places, and so it became a real important mutual support group. Pain sometimes traps our energy and locks it up. Telling stories about our pain unlocks the pain and frees that energy for creative purposes. So when we find our own voice and can tell our own story, in a miraculous way, it oftentimes helps others to find their voice and their story too. And there we may find pieces of ourselves in their story.
I kind of like the image of gift along with this treasure in earthen vessels that we are to one another. Oftentimes, if we use the word gift, and especially if we are within a church context, people will think in terms of the coins, the dollar bills that get placed in the offering plate, bringing cakes to a funeral or hot dishes to recently bereaved, or pretty packages wrapped up with ribbon and under a tree or brought in a special occasion. And certainly these are all gifts. On the other hand, there are many gifts that happen in just the everyday occurrences. We saw the sprinkler this morning dancing in the sunlight. Did you catch the rainbow?
Mm-hmm.
And we're with our youngest child, our 11-year-old, and we agreed that was a gift, sort of like a goodbye. I'm glad so many of you also were receptive to that gift. I'm sure God makes little surprises and gifts for us all the time, but they aren't a gift unless we also receive them. And in your listening this morning and in your sharing, those were gifts given and received to one another. And I guess that's something I'd like to take back from holding with me, is the many conversations I had with other people and sharing a little bit in their lives. One thing I always like to do when I go to a workshop or a conference or something is be attuned to the books, sometimes the music that other people have found meaningful and that have tied in with their experience. I would just like to name a few of my favorite authors, and if some of you are wanting to add a few names of books to your reading lists, I will offer some that I've found meaningful. And I wrote the authors' names on the board just because it's a little easier that way. This one book by Elizabeth O'Connor, Journey Inward, Journey Outward, has a lot to say about this getting to know oneself, the renewal, the retreat idea, and the going out. She also has written another book, The Call to Commitment. And one little treasure from several years ago, Gift from the Sea by Anne Merle Lindbergh. I see some nods around the room. Some of you know that book. I read it some years ago and thought it was just the perfect thing to give to my mother when she was retiring from teaching and making a move. And it turned out it had been very meaningful to her at that transition point in her life. And Madeline L'Engle is an author whom my son at age 12 first introduced me to. She's written such marvelous stories for the adolescent age group, A Wrinkle in Time, A Wind in the Door, Young Unicorns, a number of them that are full of adventure. She's got a list of books, longer than my arm. But after I'd gotten into her adventure stories that are really true. She does a lot with the idea of truth is more than facts. It's things that ring true in experience. And she has written The Irrational Season, which is built around the church year, the seasons of the year. And one I discovered in the Holden Library that I haven't yet read, A Stone for a Pillow, she calls subtitles Journeys with Jacob, and a circle of quiet, kind of zeroing in on this, you know, who am I, what are the real meanings in life. Another one, and it was good, kind of taking off on the creation idea. So those are just a few favorites I'd like to leave with you. We've enjoyed very much having many of you be in our sessions with us two, three times. That's been a real gift you've given us, and we thank you very much for sharing of yourself. That's been empowering for us.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.